We're going to continue on our discussion with Super Christians today. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, thanks once again for joining me. We're continuing our series called The Behind Enemy Lines here on Study, Grow, Know. I'm Dr. Fred, and I'll be your host for the next few minutes. The last time we were together, we talked about what I called super Christians. And we talked about the fact that many of them are simply masquerading as successful Christian entrepreneurs who have succeeded because God allegedly blessed them. And the same can be held out to you if only you will have faith and share in with their ministry by donating money to them. You know, it's almost too easy for most people to fall prey to the lies that are touted and lived by today's super Christian. They parade themselves across the world stage with all their pomp and circumstance, and they are literally worshipped by many. They need to be shunned, but at the same time, they need to be prayed for, because what they are doing certainly does not bring glory to God, in my opinion. Maybe God will have mercy on them and open their eyes to their folly so that they will be saved. Because honestly, the way some of them act, the way some of them live, you have to question whether or not they truly know God at all through Jesus Christ. That should be our prayer. Instead, too many people within Christendom wind up encouraging them in the lifestyle that they already have. I shudder to think of how Jesus would react to the many people within the visible church today who are seen as the super Christian if he were physically here on this planet, so that we could see and interact with him physically face to face. The way certain individuals tell it, and to hear them talk about it, they would have no problem slapping Jesus on the back and hanging out with him. It would be just too cool. A very well-known ministry, and I'm using the term very loosely here, was recently outed by a major newspaper. The public is now seeing what has existed for years behind the scenes with the opulent wealth and, might I suggest, tremendous waste, all to keep the two main people of the situation happy and the money flowing in. What has been largely shielded from public view has become fodder for the tabloids. The prosperity, here's one of them which says this: the prosperity gospel preached by the two individuals that I'm not going to name, who built a single station into the world's largest Christian television network, has worked out well for them. These people have his and her mansions, one street apart in a gated community here, and provided by the network using viewer donations and tax-free earnings. But the wife, who is 74, rarely sleeps in the $5.6 million home with tennis courts and pool. She mostly lives in a large company house near Orlando, Florida, where she runs a side business, the Holy Land Experience theme park. The husband, 78, has an adjacent home there too, but rarely visits. Its occupants are often a security guard who doubles as the wife's chauffeur. Now, here's a question. Why does any so-called Christian need to live so high on the hog? The entire situation came to light because of infighting among family members of this gargantuan television ministry. And the tragic thing is that many in the world have likely believed that these two individuals were beautiful examples of God's marvelous blessing bestowed on the lives of those who lived a true Christian life. Too many within Christendom are willing to believe that if you live for God, you will be rewarded materially with blessings from on high. That includes financial blessings. Now, this is certainly what the two individuals I'm referring to teach. And Christendom, many within Christendom, have bought it hook, line, and sinker. The world isn't buying it, believing that so-called ministries such as the one I'm referring to are man-made, and they derive their blessings, quote-unquote, from the many guilt cues and misguided understandings of Scripture that are regularly foisted upon the unwary or unthinking. You know, it's really ridiculous when you stop to think about all of this. God is not mocked. And whether he takes the time to judge a person or group during this lifetime or the next is totally his business. Even with the likely eventual downfall of this very famous ministry or others like it, there will be other ministries that slip through the cracks. Moreover, the problem of charlatans posing as ministers or evangelists will continue until Jesus returns. This should be no surprise to us simply because of Jesus' warning to the extent in Matthew 24 where he mentions this, along with numerous other warnings from Paul. Now, one notable text that I've mentioned before is 2 Timothy 3:13, which tells us point blank, quote, "But evil men and imposters will proceed from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived," unquote. Now, whether the two people I'm referring to are outright evil people or whether they are simply misguided Christians or complete imposters, only God knows for sure. These super Christians, in my view, should not be living like they do. Jesus did not. Paul did not. Many other believers in the apostles throughout the New Testament scriptures did not. And most authentic believers throughout history since then have not. As the apostle Paul states, quote, "For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." And that's 1 Timothy 6:10. By the way, many people often misquote that by just simply saying money is the root of all evil. That's not what Paul says. He says, "For the love of money." Money itself is not evil. It is the inordinate love affair that people have with it that destroys. And it is one of the oldest motivating factors since creation itself. By it, many people gain tremendous power over others and are placed in a special category by the remaining. They appear to be untouchable, but there is always the payback, and it will eventually arrive as a heavy taskmaster to those who use money to abuse power and privilege. You know, the super Christian lacks respect and what I believe to be love for God, if they ever had it at all, because they seem to be too in love with themselves and their own wants and desires. They have a tremendous sense of self-importance. They lack wisdom. They lack discernment. They lack humility. They lack many things in spite of all the material blessings that they have supposedly come to know. In all possibility, though, the most significant thing that they may lack is actual and authentic salvation. For all their antics, they are little more than proud showmen, picking the pockets of the average person who refuses to think for themselves. As long as there are people who believe they need to be spoon-fed, super Christians will exist and will have a following. That is, as I said before, until Jesus returns. Well, enough of the super Christians. Let's move along for a few minutes remaining here. You know, God has always had a plan of salvation, and in a sense, so has Satan. God's plan involves saving as many people as possible from Satan's kingdom into his, God's, and ultimately creating new heavens and a new earth over which God the Son will reign forever. God's plan of salvation has been relatively easy to comprehend, though unfortunately impossible to believe for far too many people because of its simplicity. Many have left this life without God, without his truth, and tragically and ultimately without his salvation. Now, on the other hand, Satan's plan has been easy to discern for the informed. It has always been to wrest or keep control of this planet from God and its citizens. And his plan includes declaring himself to be God of all things. Coupled with this, Satan has also endeavored to enslave as many human beings as possible in order to keep God's salvation from affecting their souls. Satan has built into his charade of salvation a convoluted mess of winding avenues that seem to go nowhere. But through it all, the promise of secret knowledge or gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S, is always held out to the initiate, the seeker. Just as there are many passageways, halls, doors, and stairways that end in nothing in the Winchester Mystery House in San Jose, California, Satan's most enjoyable method of snaring people has been through the promise of providing spiritual insight by following the maze created by the occult. Now, Satan did that with Adam and Eve, promising them that would become like God, who knows good from evil. That's in Genesis 3. If they would simply submit themselves to his lie, they would gain immeasurable insight and knowledge. Well, they did, but the cost was tremendous. All creation groans from the weight of that failure to continue to follow God's plan. You can read about that in Romans 8, 19 through 24, and looks to the day when the curse will be fully and finally lifted. You know, people, if you didn't know this, but I'm sure you do, people can be and often are extremely gullible. From Eve and Adam to present-day humanity, people have always chased after the promise of learning the mysteries of the universe. Satan has designed it so that people will believe that the God of the Bible is a selfish and jealous individual, not wanting to share real information with any part of his creation. Though Satan is a consummate liar, people believe him when he speaks as if he is telling the truth and nothing but the truth. He tends to sound authoritative, and just like the ideal con artist, people only accept his words as truth, despite any misgivings. They not only do that, but they tend to hang on every word with bated breath, even waiting for more, in spite of any reservations that they might have toward him and his message. You know, we can go way back in biblical history, highlighting specific details of the many times Satan has entrapped those of God's creation through his ability to lie naturally and without hesitation. Like the master magician who promises his audience thrills and more thrills through one sleight of the hand or redirect after another, causing them to believe that he is truly bending the laws of physics, Satan plies his trade of dishonesty with an ever-increasing web of lies and deceit. The more complex it has become, the greater the numbers of people who seem interested in it. Now, if we simply go back to the beginnings of this country alone, we can clearly see, because it has been so often repeated and verified, how Satan gained a foothold in the beginnings of America through those who founded this country. It's nearly common knowledge that many to most of our founding fathers were deists. Yes, they cited the Bible and referred to it often while drafting documents upon which this country was founded. The laws that were crafted for this country were based on the Bible. However, we also know it to be fact that many of these same founding fathers were highly involved in esoteric societies, such as the Freemasonry or Rosicrucianism, the Illuminati, and others. They all share a common thread, and that common thread is the direct worship of Satan, believing him to be Lucifer, the God who is going to save this planet. Those who have been found to be trustworthy are granted the privilege to share in the knowledge of the esoteric. Now, of course, this is difficult for some to believe because no one wants to acknowledge that the people who founded any country, much less the United States, could have been heavily involved in and indoctrinated by esoteric belief systems. How could they be if this country was founded upon Christian principles? Well, there are any number of books out today that detail the history of this country, the peculiar physical layout of Washington, D.C., and the fact that people like George Washington used their power and prestige as 33rd degree Masons to direct this country towards secretly revealed occult prophetic ends. Those prophetic ends are not the ends that are disclosed in the Bible, but are those disclosed by Satan himself throughout generations. We're going to continue next time, and we're going to be touching on a book written by Tom Horn called Petrus Romanus, and it has some interesting things to tell us about, and I think it's interesting to bring that information to the fore. Whether you agree with it or think it has merit, that's up to you, but I'm going to bring it to you anyway next time. So that is our show for today. And I thank you for joining me. But until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you just exactly how richly blessed you truly are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.